Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Raina Starr. I am your host. Sorry about that horrible sound quality. I actually cannot stand the theme music to the show. And I am looking for suggestions that I don't have to pay for. So, yeah, if you have somebody or a piece of music that might be fitting the show, let me know because I'm, like, over it. Anyway, it's loud, it's obnoxious, it's fucking old. I know I am too, but you come to expect that from me. Anyway, with me this afternoon for the hour is one of my favorite writers, Diana Rochelle. But before we get to her, Desperate Housewives is not GPG or even an R-rated show. So, bad language, bodily function, dirty talk of any kind might offend you. This may not be the show for you, but you know it is. Come on. We already know what you're dealing with. Desperate Housewives is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredibly wicked one, my favorite, Dorothy Morrison. Please check out www.wickedwitchstudios.com for all of your witching needs. All right. Author of multiple books, including the soon-to-be-released but kind of already, Hex Twisting. Yeah, give it up for Diana Rochelle. Hey, lady, what's up?
Hi, I'm doing good. So for those confused, I will answer to Rochelle, but I usually go by Diana Rachel. And yeah, my book is out, sort of, kind of, but officially not until December 8th. So if you're getting it, yay!
Oh my gosh. So I've been pronouncing your name incorrectly the whole fucking time, huh? It's Rachel, not Rochelle.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about it a few times, but at this point, you're old, I'm old. I'm lucky if I answer to, hey, you. So I think we're fine.
Okay, I am going to write it in big phonetic fucking letters. And I think what's throwing me is the J. So I'm trying to pronounce the name as – I'm trying to pronounce the J as a Y. And I think that's my problem. And I need to just kind of ignore the J.
Yeah, just pretend it's not there. The J is a Y sound in Polish, or the Polish pronunciation is Rahel, but I only really do want to do that if I really need somebody to produce some phlegm.
Oh, you're hilarious. I love you. So how have you been? I haven't talked to you in a minute. It's been a little bit. What's been happening? How's the COVID situation on your end of the world? What's been going on with promotion? What's been going on with travel? Tell me every little thing.
Wow, there's been a lot. I think the last time we talked was in February, so it's been a minute.
Yeah.
So I am a COVID long hauler. I did just get my booster shot. And yes, the vaccination did actually help with the long haul symptoms a lot.
Sure.
So we are able to take our 10-year, we took our 10-year-old, actually, he's 11 now, on his birthday for his first shot. And he is so excited because that means spring soccer is coming back. And he has missed it, and he's been running up the walls. So it's good to see that. I was really excited for him. And normally he hates needles, so that was impressive. He was a champ. Like, all I had to do was find a picture of baby goats, and he was fine. So
nice.
That went pretty well.
Awesome.
We did an Urban Magic relaunch tour this summer because the book came out March 8th of 2020, and we all know what happened there.
Yeah,
and so I was planning on spending my like post-divorce year just like driving up and down the West Coast to every shop that would have me, and I ended up in Michigan instead.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I met my current partner at Convocation in Detroit, and the only reason I was there was because my business partner in San Francisco was just suddenly got this bug of, you need to do another Midwestern convention. You need to do one. I know you do Minnesota every year, but you need to do this. And I'm just looking at her going, are you crazy? My money has disappeared. What are you talking about? But sure. I went and did it. And, right. Granted, my partner's introduction to me was me yelling, gentlemen, get the fuck out of my room.
Okay.
But it has evolved since then.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's get to the point. All right. What happened? What?
Yeah.
I'm lost.
Well, what
I
happened?
Need breadcrumbs.
So, yeah. So I was one of the newer presenters there, so nobody knew who I was, which I'm used to people not knowing who I am. I've been doing this for 20 years and flying under the radar for a bunch of different reasons most of the time. So, I come in, I have my first, big Diana Rachel book to present, and uh-huh. Nobody at Convocation knew me, so they put me at 10:30 at night on Thursday night. So,
wow. Okay.
And there was one presenter before me, and I guess he's actually, really well-known in the heathenry movement. I don't know him because the Norse stuff doesn't appeal to me. I'm Polish. It's a thing where I respect
yes.
and value it. It's just, hi, neighbor, please stay off my lawn. We're good.
right.
But my partner is a Finnish shaman, so even though it's not really Scandinavian, there's a crossover. And
okay.
So... they were there, and they were having this super intense conversation in the class with the teacher right before me. And I was jet-lagged because I'd just flown in a couple hours before. And I'm looking at the super intense conversation, and if you go to these cons, you know what those look like. You know when it's going to be, a super huge thing for the people involved. And I could see that, and I wanted to give them the space for that. At the same time, they were doing it. They were making no move to clean up the room for the next class. And so
gotcha.
I came over, and yeah, and I did the, hi, I'm going to need the room in a few minutes, and, da-da-da-da-da. And, and they kind of oh, of course, whatever, and then immediately went right back into the super intense conversation, making no move to clean up. So I looked at this. I set a timer on my phone. I just kind of sat and chilled for about 15, 20 minutes. The timer went off. I had exactly 10 minutes to get my room ready. And
right.
I stood up, and they were still being super, super intense. And I stood up, and I was trying to be polite, and the jet lag kicked in. And what came out of my mouth was, gentlemen, kindly get the fuck out of my room.
Wow.
And they both, stared at me, deer in headlights. If I had done this in Minnesota, I would have had two permanent enemies.
Oh, wow.
You know, guy types in there are ungracious about this sort of thing. But with the absolute credit of both of them is I got the room set up. I did have to skip a few things I wanted to do that I normally do. And both of them came by before my class started to apologize to me when I feel like I was the one that was rude. And in both cases, they're like, well, we'd like to talk to you more later. And the presenter, he didn't have time. He had too much going on. But the other one, Cinti, something came up and I just kind of, especially since when I was running the Emperor Norton's Magical Folk Social in San Francisco, and we joke that it's the island of misfit toys for magical people. And they were talking to me about, I'm Finnish. There's not a lot of stuff for that here. It's not really recognized the same way. And I just looked at them and went, you're one of mine, aren't you? And they didn't know what that meant. They thought I was talking about my class. And, I'm like, okay, well, let's have coffee later. So the next day, I go into this class on precision cursing, and they're there, and they get super excited to come sit by me. And they asked me for that cup of coffee, and it turned into basically a day-long conversation. And then the next day, they'd heard about the empath class I was teaching. And initially, I had been asked to teach it as a children's class, and I was not, and I had noticed that they'd moved it from 9:30 on Friday to 9:30 on Saturday, and I thought that was just because I'd complained about, hey, you're having me teach the last class that night and the first class in the morning, that's not cool. But it turned out the reason they moved it is when they use scared to show the interest. It was much larger than they anticipated, and I didn't think to look at it. And I walked into 65 energy sensitives, empaths, psychic vampires, and other variations, almost all of them in some kind of stage of crisis.
And
as it turns out, my partner, Cinti, has worked with emotions as animistic spirits for more than 20 years. And so while I was teaching people the esoteric energy management and how to ground and shield properly and why you need to do it differently if you're an empath, they started working the room on the other side, and they just met me, and it was like I've been working together 20 years. Like, you know, it was just, okay, I know what you're going to do. You know what I'm going to do. You take this, I'll take this. It's like we already knew each other's strengths and weaknesses. And so, yeah, like when we came out, there was a friend of theirs that was waiting to meet me, and she asked, so how long have you guys known each other? And we're just looking at her going, we just met. But a lot of people, like, they were assuming that, like, we'd been together, and we literally just met. I ended up in Michigan because we were going to go to Paganicon in Minnesota together, and it got canceled the day before I was going to fly out, and we had already decided that we were going to take a road trip, get to know each other better, see what all was there with us. And I'm like, okay, there was some other shamanic work they wanted to do with me. So I'm like, okay, I'll fly out for that instead since my plans have changed. And so I flew out there and shelter in place at San Francisco. And then 2 or 3 days later, it hit Michigan. So I couldn't, and my flights were canceled. So I just kind of had to stay there. And I guess it was just a high pressure cooker. Let's see if we work.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty remarkable, actually, because life doesn't normally work that way on any kind of level that I know of, where you, I mean, it just, yes, have I married people, like, when, you know, I've met them and it's like, oh, you two seem to have known each other forever, and it's like, yeah, we just met, but it all works, so we stick with it, but yeah, no, that's very cool. And the fact that, you know, COVID just happened to have happened in such a way to kind of throw you together is fairly amazing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is not what it had in mind. COVID seems highly impersonal to me, but it worked out that way.
Nothing wrong with the universe working in mysterious ways. I'm just saying.
I'm pretty sure without the pandemic, I probably would not have landed here. I love San Francisco. My partner and I are both already trying to figure out, okay, so how close do we have to watch the market until it drops back into normal humans can afford it, which looks like it may happen at some point. But it's you know, all of a sudden I'm stepping into a role as a mom and stepping into a role as somebody who is co-parenting children. And fortunately, that also seems to be going pretty well, and I know one of our kids has special needs, and so that's been, like, a rapid learning process in the middle of all of this career stuff that my partner's pushing me to do while they are working very hard to finish school. So it's been, and I'm not going to say it was the, oh, it was so easy. Like, both of us have been married before. I was involved with a trans person before I was involved with them. And so there's like extra difficulties that can be added that I was prepared for. And it's just the, okay, we've both been through this. We know what mistakes we've made. And, you know, like the first 6 months, it wasn't like first date conversations. It was, here are the tough conversations that most couples avoid having in the schmoopy phase.
Yeah. Which is smart to have.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Several conversations I wish I had had during my first couple of marriages. I finally wised up on number three, but there's still things that, you know, we didn't prepare each other for, but that's just a totally separate thing. So things seem to be going fairly well for you. I mean, kind of intense and a lot, but
yeah,
I don't know. You always seem able to handle everything. And You know, energetically, even when things are good, they're difficult. So managing all of that, you got to be made out of some tough stuff. I'm not so sure I'm that tough. So I give you a lot of credit. Parenting, co-parenting, parenting a child that's not yours, all of these things have their own set of, I don't want to say problems, but bumps in the road.
There's
stuff. I mean, that's a lot. And you have a child now with special needs, which is other stuff. So, I mean, I don't know how you're getting it all done. I think, you know, I mean, from the title of your book, Irritated Witch, you must have some serious moments.
Oh, yes. That book came about over the process of many years of aggravating behavior. And I am even now just learning about some grand old occult traditions of just being a dick to somebody you think is a newbie. So I guess that, and again, it's the, because, and I think I've talked about this, is I was Wiccan, and I, like, formally had my coven release me from initiations and vows, and there's certain things with initiation where you can't unring the bell. I want to acknowledge that, but it was coming to understand that because of the work I do with animism and the way that I work and invent, it was going to start becoming both dangerous for me and dangerous for people in a tradition with me. So it was the, we're going to part ways absolutely amicably, which, you know, leaving a coven amicably is a feat in and of itself frequently. So I've been very fortunate that way. But one, there are some people that had their opinions about me doing this that were not part of the situation or agreement, who tried to find ways to use magic to enforce their opinions. And there's just, you know, you've seen, we're both big fans of Dorothy Morrison, and she will talk about, like at Hexa, she was telling the story about the lady that was having an affair with her husband who decided that Dorothy was in the way of this somehow when clearly she wasn't. And the logic fail there is a whole other separate thing of social conditioning. Plus, that woman ended up with Dorothy Morrison on her ass. I pity her. But it was, there's just a lot of people that get really petty, and it's, you know, these days, magic used to be, the information about magic and how to hex and curse and send negative energy, it's not that it wasn't happening, it's that it took a lot more effort to find out how to do it. Sure. These days, especially as the more American, North American originated folk witchcraft has come out, and, you know, I'm Slavic, so I'm seeing stuff from Europe that was not necessarily within the Wiccan sphere, but more of the folk practice sphere that has started to evolve into its own thing. But all of that information is on the internet. A lot of it is accessible, you know, and a lot of it is that also people aren't dealing with their emotions nearly as well as they used to, in my opinion. Maybe, you know, and I think this is something that's a really bad byproduct of World War One and Two, and it kind of creates a powder keg buildup. So what used to, you know how there used to be issues with adolescence, when a kid hit adolescence where poltergeist activity would start because of a combination of emotional buildup, what the hell is happening to my body, and, you know, the kid living in a society where kids basically have no power, and so it would burst out in weird ways, except now this is starting to happen with adults too.
Wow.
And, you know, I am me. I challenge people. I am a beautiful, fat woman who makes no apologies for being queer or liking, you know, liking the things that I like or doing the things that I do. And this, no matter where I go, this fucks with somebody's head, and they will occasionally implode in my direction.
Sorry.
And, yeah, and this has been something that has happened to me since I was a child in different ways. And when I was a child, I had some protection from it, from ancestral stuff and family stuff. And then, you know, this is the thing is when a parent dies, that protection leaves you. And my father died, and a good chunk of that protection left me, and I had to deal with it. And that started with figuring out what the hell is going on, because I came from that 1980s, 1990s schooling of curses are very rare. They don't really happen. And I had to uneducate myself from that to fully accept what was really happening. And then because you can't really deal with it until you can accept that, hey, this is really happening. And, you know, I've been very fortunate in that the last two fully licensed psychotherapists I've had are both witches. So I don't have to worry about talking to a professional about the trauma side of it with, you know, with further consequences. But I'm thinking about, like, so I'm going to be teaching at WitchCon this February, and I'm going to be teaching class on healing from magical trauma, because it's the natural follow-up to hex twisting where, okay, first you've got the problem. Somebody has decided to unleash all of their flying monkeys on your damn lawn. So here's how you deal with the monkeys, but then you have to deal with the damage to your lawn. And so I'm thinking about, okay, so if you live in a region where you cannot talk about witchcraft or magic or the impact of somebody breaking your ward somehow, you know, if you can't talk to your therapist about that, you know, how do you code it so you can still get the help you need without creating further risks to yourself and your family? So this is the thing that I'm working on now. But for the stuff that was in there, like some of it was just the petty, the I'm mad at you, I'm going to throw. And yeah, you can do a reversal, but if somebody is prepared for you to do a reversal, it can turn into a game of tennis. So one of the things I was teaching at HexFest was tricky reversals, which is how to do the reversal in such a way that instead of a game of tennis, it's storing ammo. It is giving yourself some energy you can sell to a spirit. It is, thanks for the energy, I'm going to use it and recraft it for this in different ways. And, you know, finding different ways to either get these people to wear themselves out. My personal favorite was that when I've had been in situations where I've had two different people who didn't know each other throwing at me for different reasons, and I would bind them to each other so they'd just be throwing at each other while thinking they were throwing at me, and thus be too busy to bother me. So I have also used this in management techniques.
Yeah, I have used this in – I have also used this during the during my daytime life,
I mean, Star Trek said hell is other people, and I consider that advice.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right?
No, I mean, it's, it's good to be able to have the tools needed when you are either an unwilling or not even a participant in somebody else's shit, to be able to say, oh, look, you both have really bad aim this week, and you're just aiming at each other. I'm going to facilitate that a little bit more and give you guys more to do so you leave my happy ass alone. Because I find in certain situations, even if people don't necessarily know you're a witch, they know you're a witch.
Oh,
you know
what
I mean?
I have seen that. Yeah.
It's like... Yeah, I mean, and I live in the South, and there's a lot of people who, they just can't put their finger on it. They're not quite sure why I'm so different, but they just know there's something that gripes their buttocks, and they can't figure it out. And it's like, I know, what is it about me that makes y'all so crazy? Gotta be something. And, of course, you know, I don't bother to tell them. Some of them know, but some of them really don't. Some of them just think, there's something going on. Stuff goes weird when she's around. And that's about the sum total of how they figure it out, which is fine. But, yeah, every once in a while it's like, just leave me alone. Please leave me alone. Please leave me alone. Oh, you don't want to leave me alone. Okay. We're going to fix you now.
Especially when they just mentioned their prayer warrior on you. And I know this was, again, this is one of the fallacies of the 90s, is there were a lot of people who assumed that if that Christian warfare, because they didn't believe in Christianity, that this somehow meant that the religion didn't have power or no power over them. Oh. And a battery is a battery. Electricity is going to shock you no matter what's generating it. And like you do run the risk of like running into the prayer warrior types that are still going to come at you because that's still magic.
Yeah, and they don't believe it. It's so weird when they refuse to accept the fact that what they're doing is actually magic. I think it's hilarious.
Yep.
My mother mother is one of these people. It's incredible to me. It's like, and my mother was a fucking magic user at one time, which is why it's even more astounding to me. It's like, how do you not know this shit? But she's changed.
Maybe because it feels different to her. But yeah.
Maybe.
Or denial. Denial could be part of it.
Oh, God.
And, with most of the Christian stuff, especially, if you know the spirits they're talking to, if you are in a place where you can just treat the spirits as spirits and not as deities and go, you know, hey, I just wanted to talk to you. This person that's like talking to you is doing this. Could you make it stop?
Mm-hmm.
So, Jesus has built us a nice guy and actually is. There's a reason. And, it's a little different. We've got a whole congregation on you, but I do talk about that in the book. But, they may have different flavors. The energies may feel different ways, but it's still magic. I mean, do you remember when the book Prayer of Jabez was popular? Like it was on a bunch of bestseller lists in, I want to say 98. And was this prayer that was, and it was this cute little book and all of the super churchy types were coming in and buying it and going, oh, this is so good. And I looked at it and it is a prosperity spell. It even talks about the step-by-step way to line up your mental and physical energy to get the best results from the prayer, because it's a freaking spell, people.
I know. Oh, my gosh, I know. I was watching this show the other night about this woman who had started this church movement, and they were all losing weight, allegedly, based on basically praying it away. Instead of indulging in your love of food, you were supposed to indulge in your love of Jesus. And it's like, oh my God, Jesus is all right, but he don't taste as good as this damn donut. I'm sorry. I don't know how y'all are doing it. Anyway, everybody who had done it apparently put all the weight back on when the founder went to jail. She didn't go to jail. She died in a plane crash. It's just so interesting how people will justify certain things that they want to believe. I'm astounded.
Right? Well, now I'm thinking about that story. She died in a plane crash. Like, was she an energy vampire or something? So she's just, like, sucking the pounds out of them because... Wow.
Yeah, she was sucking something out of them. I think the whole thing was that she was, when you have somebody who's a preacher and all of these people, it's all entertainment. And it fascinates me how people are thinking that things are, it's a holy messenger. That's not. You're being entertained. You are being tricked by a magician. You are being entertained. That's all that's happening. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't some people with some kinds of powers, but not to this degree, not like this. I mean, these folks, it's sleight of hand. It's, stirring up, what is it called when you have a bunch of people and you stir them up so they're all on the same page? It's not mob mentality necessarily, but it's this kind of hypnosis where you have everybody on the same page, at least for a little while. And while they're in church and all together, it's all groovy. But at some point when you guys leave the church or, for the afternoon or the week or whatever it is, the energy immediately, and it's palatable. You can feel it.
Interesting. And there is a word for it, but I can't think about what that word is. And I know, and it's odd because I've seen that energy used on smaller scale with covens and for group mind work. I've seen something very similar, except usually there's like discussion and consent before people do it with the,
right.
This is what's going to happen. You're going to need some aftercare because you will, like there's just stuff that can happen to you psychologically when you do this kind of work. This is the price of magic. But
yeah,
I'm thinking, okay, so like thinky thoughts, and not enough coffee to keep up with the thinky thoughts, but yeah, I have seen that. And yeah, it's, you know, everyone's like super, super into it, and then reality intervenes.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible. That mass hypnosis, that mentality of, you know, we're all going to believe this and you're going to feel so good, basically because you're being told to. And I think it's a weird trick because for a lot of people, it starts off as, I'm not going to feel that no matter what you tell me. But because of all of the energy that surrounds them in that moment, when you're talking about a congregation of like 25 people and you have one person who's like, I'm not doing it, I'm not doing it, you can almost see the resistance wane while the conversation is going on. It's really amazing. But
and
what I want to talk about is, yeah, I mean, in addition to this, I mean, some of the stuff I wanted to talk about, because I do want to talk about the book, and you and I have this bad habit of you come on, we have a plan, sort of, and we never follow it.
Oh, no, we're terrible.
Because I could talk to you for hours, because I've always been a big fan, but, you know, I get you on the air, and it's like, girl, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, And then it's like, but we got to talk about this. Okay, so let's go back to what we were supposed to be talking about so the publicist doesn't come after me and say, you know, Raina, we love you, but you don't really talk about the book much. So, yeah. So anyway, hex twisting, counter magic spells for the irritated witch. Now, what is the biggest misconception about hexing, do you think?
I think, first of all, I think that one of the biggest misconceptions about the book is that it is just reversal magic. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions about hexing, you know, I'm not sure. I think that a lot of it comes down to a lot of people think that harm none applies wholly to how you go about breaking a hex. And I'm a big believer in self-defense, and a lot of hex and curse magic originated as defense for people that didn't have any other means of protecting themselves. So if you're looking into anything from feudal Europe to African slaves in North America, you know, both of those people were in places where other people basically owned them. And sometimes your only option was to poison or hex a bitch. And
agreed.
It has evolved. Yeah. And, you know, not everyone is going to use things in a way that we would agree is morally upright. But you have to understand that where it came from was not from a sociopathic place. It was from a I have no other options place. And
you know,
that is
I
why
find,
hex.
I find I have a lot of issue with other people deciding what is morally correct without having all of the information. And even, I mean, how much of it is anybody's business when you need to protect yourself against an entity or a person who is wishing you harm? I mean, how much of that is really supposed to even be for public consumption? Because my issue is, you're not living this life, and I don't need your permission to protect myself in whatever form I find will work. And I just find it very interesting that people have a whole lot to say about what other folks do to protect themselves. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, too.
My thought is that, as long as you are respecting other people's boundaries, it's nobody's business but yours. The problem is that a lot of people really like to get up in each other's boundaries going, no, my way is the right way and not yours. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed a surprising number of attacks that I've dealt with have actually come down to somebody trying to decide for me what was right or wrong for me to do to protect my own space.
Yeah.
I know, you know, like another, it's related, another point of contention that can come into this. If I'm dealing with a ghost that is being violent, you know, yes, trying to release it or go into the light and heal it, that's all fine and well. But one, sometimes, and this is a tricky thing that I'll be talking more about as I get more into the empath work in future years, but there's a certain level of narcissism in thinking it's your job to heal everything. If that, you know, if I'm having problems with the ghost and breaking things and punching me, no, I don't need to gently release it. I can either trap it or kick its ass out. And, you know, yeah, it might be, there are situations where healing might be the better option, and I always do a reading and see what the best option, but even with something that's dead, there are still choices, and it can choose not to heal.
Interesting.
And if it's choosing not to heal, it can do that somewhere that's not on my lawn and somewhere that's not on my neighbor's lawn.
Interesting point. So, I hadn't even thought about that. Because, you know, when you're in a reactionary modality and you're thinking just about basically saving yourself or your loved one, whatever the situation is, you're not really thinking necessarily about the ramifications of what your actions may or may not be. You just know you want it to stop. So I think your approach is something that I know I need to think more about, because I'm very reactionary. And I think, you know, the idea of, you know, just make this bad energy, this bad feeling, this bad entity go away, isn't really enough thought, you know.
No.
I know I feel like it is, but it's really not, because there are repercussions. No matter what you do, there is a repercussion. I know a lot of people, you know, are like, oh, you know, that whole come back three times, whatever. It's not that I necessarily believe that. I do believe that for every action, there is an equal reaction back. And you really need to be careful about what you might be inviting back in.
So the way I put it in the class that I taught recently was there's no such thing as a way. So when you banish something, it still goes somewhere. And it's going to be more successful if you decide before you banish it where it's going to go. Now, if you're going to banish it to a volcano or to a black hole, it helps if you have a little talk with a black hole or the volcano and make sure it's okay with that, because if you have an animistic spirit on your ass, you can't banish those.
Interesting.
So, yeah, like animistic spirits just are, they are not banishable. Like I've actually like taught classes where here's the rating. So, you know, a fairy you can banish, ghosts, djinn, whatever. But like once you get into stuff that is and was and ever has been, you are made of it. It is not made of you. You are not going to be able to banish it.
Interesting.
And again, having been, you know, put through some fairly intense field experience in the process of writing this book and what led to me writing this book, I've learned a lot of things that, you know, like I adored Scott Cunningham, absolute foundation work for my stuff, but Scott Cunningham never wrote about metaphysical vomit or some
true.
Of the weird ways.
This is true.
Yeah, or weird ways that you can get injured when you are dealing with magical attacks or spirits that are not happy with you, or just an energy that exists in the world alongside you that just doesn't agree with you. And, you know, I don't think I mentioned metaphysical vomit, but I'm happy to talk about it, you know, assuming you haven't eaten first.
Right, exactly. But, I like that you mentioned Scott Cunningham, because while, you know, a lot of those works were considered very important, they didn't deal with, and I think part of it was to make the idea of witchcraft easier for other people to take.
Yeah.
And I think that may be a lot of the reason why some of these things never did get addressed in those writings, and I understand that. But I'm so grateful that we've actually managed to evolve to a place where we can talk about the not-so-pretty aspects of magic and, you know, its uses and our ability to protect ourselves. I mean, it just seemed like a lot of his writing was from a very peaceful Age of Aquarius kind of standpoint.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I appreciate that. Listen, I'm a hippie too. I love all that. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, there's some shit out there that we didn't talk a lot about many years ago that definitely needs our consideration. We need to protect ourselves from things that are not quite savory. You know, I mean, there are people
yeah.
wishing to do us harm even still. And it's a good idea to know, or at least have a guideline of what those boundaries should be when you go to protect yourself, which is why this book is so friggin' necessary. And I like it a lot. It's a great book. But what would you suggest to somebody who's just blindly angry? I mean, because I know a lot, there are a lot of witches who are just fucking rageaholics, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
and there's a lot of just spilling of, I mean, there's some folks that look for slights and perceive certain things as a slight, even though slight was ever intended. And
mm-hmm.
I am concerned about people that just fly off the handle and how
yeah, and
they
seen,
might.
Yeah.
Yeah, please. No, take that. Yes,
we
please.
Have, so we have our share of drama queens, and
yes.
we have our share of people with personality disorders, just like any other practice out there.
Yep.
What I would suggest is, and I've heard hoodoo and conjure practitioners especially have the, don't do magic when you're mad, but you know, you're definitely going to do magic when you're mad. What
mm-hmm.
I try to encourage
yeah.
is to be proactive, to prevent having things to get mad about as much as you're able to, which none of us
mm-hmm.
are omniscient. There's always going to be something. But also
yep.
to stop and think about, like, I actually have a map of if something comes up that is serious enough, I do a series of readings and have a map of where do I need to control for collateral damage? Like, are there kids that might be impacted by this? What can I do for them
yep.
first? You know, if I do yep. X, Y, and Z, is this person really doing what I'm thinking they're doing? And that can be hard to get out of that, especially if you just don't like that person. You know,
mm-hmm.
and just like a series of questions to ask yourself, including the question of, can this bad situation, can this energy remain in the way it is, and can I turn it into something that benefits me instead? Because there is nothing
mm-hmm.
quite as pleasurable to me as seeing somebody who is wishing me harm get all pissed off when everything they throw at me turns out to do me a favor. It's like an
yeah.
attack without being an attack. And they lose their
yep.
shit, and it is so fun. so
I find
like,
it rewarding
if you can,
when that happens.
Yeah. So if you can, like, get yourself to slow down and think about it, do. And unfortunately, there are certain people where they're just their brain chemistry isn't going to let them do that. If they are able to get to a point where they can like have some forethought about, hey, I have this behavior pattern, aside from the, you know, talk to a therapist, learn your anger management stuff, I would suggest doing something where you take a crystal or some kind of container where you can store your mad, put the anger energy into that in the moment. And then give yourself that room, once you've drained the anger out of yourself, give yourself the room to think and plan and see what needs to be done here. And then you've literally got the battery from that emotional energy to draw on for the spell. And if it
wow.
turns out you don't need to do that, you can just save that for later.
Yeah, you know, and as I've gotten older, I try to employ that more of that thoughtfulness and more of that examination before actually doing something. And I have to admit to you, the truth of the matter is some of the things I get mad at is not even the fault of the person I think is doing something to me. They are either being leaned on by someone else, or someone else has put them in a position to try to force me into another position of you know, being angry. So I think the ability to stop before you really do hurt somebody, I'm not saying that people don't deserve it sometimes, but you got to be super clear. I mean, I've seen people throw and then something shitty really happens and the person they threw at in the first place wasn't even the person who deserved the throw.
Yeah.
So
it's important to step back and,
instances where people throw and it bounces back in fucked up ways. So, yeah, I mean, even during, like, okay, so I'm an uber liberal. Everyone knows that. And there's a whole bunch of folks who wanted to throw some shit on a previous person in charge. And I'm like, oh, I'm kind of scared of that. I don't know about that. Let me do my part, but not in the same way necessarily. So I had other things I wanted to aim at on this previous person, and I did. And, you know, they're going through some shit. You know, it's happening. But you got to be careful. I mean, I don't think I'm a hothead, too. I'm very reactionary. I have a horrible temper. Ask anybody. But you still have to employ caution. Even when you feel justified, you've got to not just feel it. You've got to know beyond the shadow of a doubt. And that's a lot harder than people want to admit.
It is. It is. And it's something that can take years and sometimes decades of cultivation. And, you know, I am also fortunate in that my life partner is almost military-minded in the way that they think. So, like, there have been times where I'm like, I'm going to go. And they're like, nope, you need to slow down. You need to slow down. This may not be what we think it is. And they've been right. But it's also because they have one of those brains where they can see possibility. Like, they have this vision ability where they can just, like, see, like, 80 different possibilities at once and figure out, like, you know, do the math in the moment to see what's most likely. It's kind of crazy. Most people do not have the benefit of somebody like that by their side. On the other hand, my business,
very true.
Yeah, my business partner is very much a shoot from the hip. And there's times when the shoot from the hip is absolutely the way to go. And in her line of work, it's something that's necessary at the same time as what we're doing. You got to slow down. You know, just please remember to slow down, which she doesn't always like hearing because sometimes she likes the chaos. I think that's part of that too. What will get me in trouble is when I can see if I do X, X, and X because I like, you know, I have an evil sense of humor. And if somebody's fucking with me, I will walk away laughing. You know, I may not even necessarily harm them. I will just confuse them into submission if allowed to do so. And so I will do the, but it's funny. No, just because it's funny does not mean it is the right, expedient, or helpful thing to do. Now, if it happens, you know, actually think about what you really want here besides just a good laugh. And this is the one where I have to remember that it's more important that things turn out okay for as many people around me as possible than it is for me to just get a good laugh at this person that may be stuck on something that happened between us 20 fucking years ago. So,
interesting.
You know,
interesting.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, have you ever cast, you know, because we're talking about hex twisting, have you ever cast, and do you have a story of casting and being totally fucking wrong?
Let me think about this one because for me, I've spent a lot of my life in some gray areas.
Okay.
Because, so here's the tricky thing with me is that I really do not start fights. I don't start them, I only finish them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is quite simply because I figured out very early how much of a punch I can pack, and
mm-hmm.
I've taken that responsibility fairly seriously. So I'm trying to think if I have hexed somebody. Okay, so there's one I did by accident, and I thought I was wrong, and I got overruled. I had an ex-boyfriend when I was like 19 or 20. I moved mm-hmm. out to Minnesota for him from Wisconsin. And when I got there, he basically just decided he wanted nothing to do with me and was a complete dick about it. And
wow.
In the course of some talking back and forth of what the hell, dude, and I think some of it was just that, I think he was bi or gay and just didn't want to tell me. And at that age and at that era, I kind of understand, but it was still just, it was a combination of that. And he'd had one of those Christian upbringings where any lustful thought was the nearest woman's fault. You know, that kind of crap going on. But, you know, I was young. I didn't know better. I was from that kind of community. So at the time, I just accepted that. Whereas now I would be like, yeah, no, bye.
right.
And I had, like, I was so pissed at him. He'd broken every promise he'd made me, did not keep his word about anything, and then was acting like I had done something wrong. And I, you know, one, my friend did get me to mildly vandalize his truck. We put baby food on it and left him a note with baby wipes to clean it up, saying you wiped your ass, now learn how to do it yourself. So mild vandalism, but not even if we needed a car wash, just, you know, I was mad.
Yeah.
Well, and I did not really understand what a man, the relationship between a man and his pickup truck were at the time. Now I do, and I have even more contempt for it.
Uh-huh.
Like, what you do with the tailpipe is on your business, but do not make it a social obligation for me. Thank you. But what I found, like, I got so pissed at him because, like, even after that, like, he did this thing where we'd sort of make up and then he'd pull back. And at one point, I was working as a cashier at Walmart, and his parents came through the line to apologize to me for their son. I had never met them. And they were coming to apologize for how shitty he was being, which, yeah, that shocked me. And I just completely lost my shit and said, I hope you die alone one day. And, like, and I felt it, like, come out from underneath the building from, like, the energy of everything around me, like, right from, like, the gut and the solar plexus and the heart. And, like, it just, like, I, like, the minute I said it, I knew I'd whammied him. Like, you know, thunderbolt. Like, hard. And I looked at that, and I'm like, okay, that was a big energy release, but I didn't connect that there it would have connected with something, as mad as I was at the time. And then I noticed, because he stayed, like, peripheral to my friends group in college, and I realized that any time he showed interest in any romantic interest in anyone, they basically ran away.
Wow.
And I realized that after I met a girl that kind of got interested in him, and I hung out with him, and then suddenly said, enough's enough, like, out of the blue, just the moment things would have started moving forward. And I went, I think I might have cursed him. I think I might have really cursed mm-hmm. him. And so I went through and did a reading, and I did. Like, completely cursed him by accident. And I went to a ritual. I did a ritual to Ma. I asked that the curse that I did be lifted, and the answer I got was no. It was a no. He was dishonorable. He deserves this. And so it's really weird, because I'm still friends with some of his friends from college, or I was until a few years ago, just because of moving around. And he is still single and still has not had a relationship since he dated me. So, and I tried to lift it because I'm like, wow, that was too much. We were young, but apparently, like, whatever I did, wherever it came from, when I had something that was, you know, an entity of judgment, like, over it, it was, no, this was deserved. We are not lifting this. You know, we know you feel guilt. We acknowledge you feel guilt, but we are not lifting this.
Yep. Okay, that's almost exactly the same situation that I have.
And it's something that has haunted me. I have asked for it to be lifted. It has not been lifted. I have tried to reverse it. I can't reverse it. I've asked all the gods I can find to help me with this, and every answer has been no. And that has been for over 35 years.
Was there oath breaking involved?
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
And this is like an aspect where people will think, because I will have people come to me for curse breaking. And when there's oaths involved, oaths operate on their own energy in the universe, which is why you have to be so careful what promises you make.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is some other energy or entity that oversees that. And
yep.
I know I was in a situation, there have been situations where there's been a question of whether or not I've broken an oath. And in those cases, it was a, well, you can't change your mind about what the oath was after the person has left.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there have been people that tried to pull that, and that's come back on them pretty badly from that energy. And like if that person made an oath, they were taking the responsibility for the energy. The only way to correct that, especially because it won't act, it will let you take the justice that you need for you, but it won't act until that person chooses to make amends. And it has to come from a truly sincere place, not just a get this curse off of me, but and I have done wrong and I need to correct this. So
and
unless
I have
that
to
person
tell you that part of my curse actually included that, and part of the curse was you have to do right. You have to make up for all of the shit that you did. And that part was never done. And even though I felt guilty about it, because you know that you move on from relationships and life changes, and I apologize for keeping you late, but I want to have a little bit more of this conversation if you're cool.
Oh, that's fine.
But yeah, cool. You know, when you feel like you're putting something out there, as far as a hex of a sort. Sometimes I do believe that the universe will use whatever is going on between you as a tool to perhaps protect other people, which is what I think happened in your situation and mine, that, you know, we just happened to be there at a point where the universe was like, hey, other person, you know, we've kind of let you know that you're fucking up and you need to settle back and reexamine doing to these other people. Okay, we've given you every opportunity. We're now going to use these two humans or this human to exact what we feel is justice upon you. And, you know, this person never got into a serious relationship after me. And it sounds like that's pretty much happened in your case as well. So I do believe that sometimes the universe, even though we're taking responsibility for having quote unquote done it, that we're, you know, we're sometimes tools of the gods, divinity, whatever gods we, you know, whatever deity we may ascribe to, you know, sometimes we are used for a purpose that may be a little bit higher than the one we're currently in with that person.
I think that, sometimes we are the delivery system and, you know, and with me, because I absolutely believe in deities, but I'm also more of an animist where it's the very permanent things I work with the most now, but the deities are still a factor in that because there's all of these human things like honors and oaths and just, The learning to respect boundaries is almost a new concept these days. I think that's one of these reasons, like we're going through this weird enlightenment / dark ages right now, both emotionally, like emotionally and morally and technologically. Mm-hmm. And so that the hexing and the cursing coming out at the same time as we're starting to see a slight slowdown in technological advances and more resistance to it again. And, you know, even though stuff is still moving forward rapidly, and it's just very, you know, even the people who are the most Kantian absolutists are kind of stuck in this phase of being morally relativist by necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, yeah, we just, like, there's just so much stuff happening where there is no frame of reference. And I think...
Yeah.
Something that you mentioned earlier and something I wanted to point out that I would like to mention in the context of hex twisting, because I know it is not culturally anchored in any specific way. Most of this stuff comes from my own practices, or I may have borrowed from another culture but then made it my own in some way. And yeah. one of the things Scott Cunningham did was made Wicca especially well-known in the United States and in the UK, more in the United States. And Wicca is one religion that allows for one kind of witchcraft. And part of what I've been finding as I've been helping people with curse breaking is that witchcraft is global and there are many, many kinds. And that means that
yeah.
if you have one person from a specific culture, like a Slavic witch cursing someone who's Wiccan, they're both going to be mm-hmm. using different tools. And if you're doing a curse breaking, you need to find out everybody's tools that are involved. Because it's going to be different
yeah.
tools, different spirits, different people you have to talk to, different land entities. It's just all going to be, there are going to be certain principles that are the same. I like how you were mentioning thermodynamics before, because I think both ethically and practically, most magic comes back to the laws of thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the absolute that transcends all the cultures, is we are still subject to physics despite our best efforts to get on a broom and take off.
Yeah.
yeah. And the better you understand that, the more empowered you're going to be with anything anybody throws at you,
yeah.
especially if you're, like, coming up against someone where you're both operating from completely different moral frameworks, where one person, it's just about what they believe is right, while the other person believes they're protecting what's theirs. And this is one of mm-hmm. the worst situations I've seen where, you know, most people, when they're in a conflict, they believe they're in the right on either side of the conflict. But
yeah.
it is also, so sometimes, and this is really difficult, is both sides are actually doing right within the context,
mm-hmm.
within their own context, just not where they're crossing over.
Right.
And so, part of this is where the boundaries keeping is absolutely necessary, but it's
yeah.
also, and this is something, a hex twist that most people wouldn't think of, is recognizing when this is happening and doing a working with the intention that everything works out the best possible for everyone involved, which takes some not being mad to do.
Yeah.
You know, bring in a miracle resolution, you know, that everything works out in the best interests for everyone, you know, or
mm-hmm.
if nothing else, just move you two to separate universes so you can just, you know, play like toddlers where it's parallel but not with each other.
That's a hard one. I mean, it's the best possible way to go, and I see and appreciate that. And it is part of what I am learning to do as far as, you know, because I have a basically scorched earth mentality, and I know
yeah.
that about myself. And because I know that, I can employ the methodology where I don't scorch the entire earth, because I know that is what I will jump to first. So there is a lot to be said about recognizing and accepting the parts of you that have that level of anger that might try to raise the entire earth because you're pissed. So I would encourage folks who are like me to take heed to what we're listening to, because Diana knows. Diana recognizes the different personality types. And I'm telling you, this book is going to be extraordinarily helpful for folks who feel like, oh, yes, revenge is sweet. Be careful. because this is not a license to kill, as it were. This is a book about thoughtfully taking stock in what you're doing before you do it and before you do destroy everything in your path.
And you, believe me, it's satisfying until you have to clean up.
Yeah.
And you always end up having to clean up. And there's always, I know people will talk about magic having a price or a kickback, and kickback is a thing, you know, especially if you're firing off when you're mad. And it's not like you don't know it's coming. And it can even happen in predictable ways. Is I went scorched earth. Oh, shit, that was my car, too.
Yeah.
So one of the things I would suggest, and this might be something that, you know, people might do better talking to my partner Cynthia about, because this is their area of expertise, is we deal with our most powerful emotions, or really all of our emotions, as animistic spirits. So we talk to them like they are individual spirits. So it may be a good idea to start a dialogue with your anger, going, okay, what are you bringing my attention to? What are you trying to protect? What do you need me to understand? And, you know, can we do this with me making the decisions and not the anger making the decisions? And that's a difficult conversation, because that usually brings up some rough stuff as to how the anger came to be as powerful as it is.
Yeah.
But then
once
you're able to have that conversation, and it does take practice, it becomes a really potent ally.
It does. And some people go as far as to naming, giving it a separate name altogether. I haven't gotten to that part of it yet, where, you know, I can identify it with a different name. But I understand that there are some people who find that extraordinarily helpful. And it also reduces a bit of the burden of the guilt. But by the same token, you know, a lot of this is driven by childhood trauma. And it's okay to recognize that and to delve into that, because there's a reason. There's a reason why we all have certain triggers. There's a reason why road rage it bothers me more than it bothers the next person. There's a reason for that. Something happened in a car once that makes me react that way. There's a reason why we have certain things that just set us off, where other people are like, what the fuck is wrong with you? We're fine.
Yep.
Everything's fine. Why are you so upset? But that's a lot, like you said, that is a lot of the self-examination, and it's worthwhile to do. And I think this book can be really instrumental in helping you dig up some of that shit to figure out, well, why do you feel so strongly about this particular thing that you want to exact a level of revenge? I mean, there's some things, yes, if somebody has really hurt you, and I mean really hurt you and done awful things to you, there are ways to go about it that will maybe minimize the damage to yourself, even if somebody else deserves it, you know. That's part of the beauty of this book. And, you know,
and a lot of what I talk about,
I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. A lot of what I talk about, especially in the beginning, is just cut cords, you know, sever connections, bind people out rather than binding them, because this way you don't carry that energetic burden. And this way you basically move, their consequences are theirs and you're not sharing them with them anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of taking on. You know, you can actually make things worse for yourself by encouraging that energy to become part of you. And I think folks don't necessarily realize that they're doing that. It's a really interesting thing, because you can be, you've heard the saying of you can become your own worst enemy. And a lot of that is how you do it. You actually, you know, like I had a parent who was very abusive, and I had to be very careful when I had small people of my own to be very careful that I did not turn into the thing I hated most.
Yeah. Yeah, because, well, think about it. Most of us, we model our parenting on our own parents. That's who we see, and so that's, like, what we go to automatically. And I came from a family where I was the scapegoat. And so the way I was taught was that my feelings didn't matter, my experiences didn't matter. If someone else was having an issue, it was my problem, even if I had nothing to do with the cause of the issue. And I don't want to parent from a place of everything is your fault because you're here, or you're the favorite, and, you know, you're the favorite and you're the scapegoat, and I'm going to have a bad day and take it out on you. I do not want to do that to my kids. I had it done to me too many times.
Yep.
And,
oh, me too.
You know, this is the thing, is there's been enough people, you know, and it did create an energy that followed me is, you know, through even my early adulthood, I ended up being in the social groups where I would get scapegoated a lot. And it has impacted the way I socialize. It's impacted my trust issues. But I refuse to let it make me be cruel or make me be bitter. You know, I still want to be open to the good people in the world and the good relationships. It's just I will tolerate a lot less shit on the way there. And that also means that sometimes if somebody starts trying to use magic because they don't want me working on my business plan for Golden Apple, or they've decided that I don't deserve whatever it is they think I'm getting, then I'm going to look for who might get hurt. I'm going to look for how they might get hurt. I am going to decide what level of impact they deserve, and then I'm not going to directly hurt them because this isn't my style. I am going to do a Godzilla act and go break their toys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it. Wow. Oh, my gosh. So I have kept you way late, and I apologize for that. But as always, a most enjoyable conversation. And I'm so looking forward to you coming back in February, because you and I seem to have this thing, February, November. Yep. And I promise you, it's not something I plan. It just works out that way. But our next conversation, for folks who don't know, is going to be about polyamory, which is something Diana knows a lot about. So we are going to have that conversation in February, which is not very far away at all. Check your local listings. And Diana, the book is called Hex Twisting, Counter Magic Spells for the Irritated Witch. It's a great book. I really recommend it. Tell people what's coming up next for you, where they can find you, and all the good information. Are you doing anything live?
Right now we are in negotiation for possibly something in Minneapolis, but I do not know yet, and that will be in December.
Okay.
I am going to be doing a guest spot at Hex in Salem on January 8th. So I'll be in town to do egg cleansings and curse diagnostics and curse breaking consultations for one day only in Salem, Massachusetts. In the next couple, so this week I am teaching at Elements in Kalamazoo. This is online and in person. I'm teaching a Magic Second Sundays for super beginners. So I'm teaching magical self-care. And on the 18th with Wicked Grounds in San Francisco, and this is an online only class, my partner and I are teaching shadow work for empaths. So it's our level 2 empath training with the deeper cord cutting and with some of the self-examination and, you know, more of the looking at what you believe an empath to be as opposed to simply learning about yourself.
Nice.
So these are the things that you're doing. And you can find them on my link tree on Instagram or on DianaRachel.com if you'd like to follow up on any of this stuff.
Awesome. Diana, thank you again. I'm really looking forward to February. I hope you have a blessed Yule. And you and I will be talking again very soon. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too. All righty. Okay, everybody, that's it for today. I will be back next week. Have a wonderful week. Bye.